Hello!
Hey guys, it's Arden Cho.
Hey, I'm Holland Roden.
Hello, this is Ian Bowen.
Hey you guys, this is Melissa Poncio.
Hi, I'm Lyndon Ashby.
Hi, I'm Dylan Sprayberry.
This is Megan Tandy.
This is Tyler Posey, and you are listening to Not Another.
Not Another.
Not Another.
This is Not Another Teen Wolf Podcast.
Yes, it is!
Oh.
Woo!
Hey, this is Jeff Davis. You're listening to Not Another Teen Wolf Podcast, my favorite podcast in the world.
The bass and the tweeters make the speakers go to war. Ah, the mighty trumpet brings the freaks out to the floor. The bass and the tweeters make the speakers go to war. Ah, the mighty trumpet brings the freaks out to the floor.
Everyone, welcome back to Not Another Teen Wolf podcast. We are on episode 103 of our podcast, recapping season 5, episode 6 of Teen Wolf, called Required Reading. Karen and myself, Natalie, are your hosts this week, as we are most weeks. And if you want to get in touch with us or with any of the other girls behind the podcast, you can always reach us to talk about the episode or any theories or thoughts that you have on Twitter, which is NATW Podcast. You can email us on natwpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Instagram, NATW Podcast, and follow our wonderful new hashtag with the pictures we've been updating from our little summer trip. Hashtag DeadKaren2K15, because you'll see, we can talk about that a little bit more at the end of the episode. And you can always follow us on our wonderful Tumblr, notanotherteenwolfpodcast.tumblr.com, which is connected to our main site, just notanotherteenwolfpodcast.com. And that has a lot of content constantly coming out, which you can keep updated, both with our own posts about Teen Wolf and also all the best that we come across in fandom. So jumping straight into this episode, Required Reading. Favorite quotes from me and Karen. Mine this week is a pretty basic one, which doesn't need too much explanation or any feelings behind it. It was just when the gang, the pack, were round at whoever's house it was, Scott's, I think, reading the book, the Dread Doctor's book, and they're all laid out on the table, and Lydia says, "My mom's book club usually has more wine," and I don't know why, I just found this hysterical, both because it's true and funny, and mom's getting drunk is funny, and it's just a really sitcom-y teenager thing to say, and I just really liked it for some reason. I just found it hysterical, and it was just a funny moment to me for some reason. So, yeah, that's me this week. It just struck me immediately as hilarious. Karen, how about you for a quote this week?
Kind of the same thing. Not anything really behind it, just thought it was funny, but it was when Styles says, "I'm starting to see the appeal of a third eye." And that's just kind of Styles' dark humor, and it was nice to get back to that a little bit.
You better hope it wasn't foreshadowing.
Oh, man. I didn't even think about that.
Sorry. No, I don't think so. But there are a couple of lines in this episode that I did wonder if it's like, ooh, that would be the worst foreshadowing ever. So, do you want to jump into the first point here about the repeated scene?
Yeah, this was really interesting. I actually quite liked it. It was right at the top of the episode, we jump right into the action, which I always like when Teen Wolf does that. I think it's really interesting, especially when we come back to revisit it later and figure out where exactly in the episode it lands. But Scott's reaching for his inhaler because he's having an asthma attack. And that was just really surprising right from the get-go. Did you have any idea what was going on?
No, I don't think so. I think I'd seen a little bit, because I didn't get to watch the episode live. I'd seen a little bit of, like, people talking about the inhaler and stuff like that. And I kind of knew there were going to be flashbacks, so I wondered if it was someone talking about, like, baby Scott maybe having an asthma attack. Like, I didn't know it was going to be this Scott, if you know what I mean. So no, I didn't really know what was going on.
Me neither. I figured the Dread Doctors had done something to them, but I kind of forgot about, like, well, in this instance, it was because they shocked him, and we know that electricity can kind of mess with the werewolf's abilities and
just
stuff
being
like that.
A werewolf, yeah.
Yeah, so that makes total sense, but I think I was just so in the moment that I didn't really think about it too much, especially when Malia charges out of the elevator and just starts wailing on the Dread Doctor, and she looked amazing.
Yeah, it was pretty intense, actually, Malia and her, like, her fighting, just her fighting for the group and for Scott, and her loyalty to Scott is very interesting to me, and just her friendship with everyone is still quite interesting to me, even though she has been sort of a staple for quite a while. And yeah, I don't know, it was cool. I'm still a little bit muddled on how everyone ended up where they ended up at the same time and all of that, but I did enjoy it.
Yeah, we can get to that in a little bit, because that does sort of clear up at the end of the episode. But the other thing I wanted to talk about, well, two things really. First is I just love the fact that even though Scott is the alpha, he's the leader of the pack, he's super strong, he's got all these abilities, Malia and Melissa are the ones that end up saving him here, and I just love that it's those two. I love that it's the women saving the boy, and I just love that Melissa is the one that gives him the shot, and, you know, she's just, she's so cool. I love her so much.
Yeah, this might sound weird, but I really love the way that she screams. Like, I really love that, like, her low-pitched, like, come on, like, I don't know, just her, kind of just her urgent yelling. I don't know, it's really real to me, and I don't know how to describe it properly, but, yeah.
It's a very guttural kind of, like, yeah, real, I think, is the best way to describe it. It makes you instantly worry for whatever is going on.
It's such a mom thing, like, it's such a, like, urgent, like, you know, kids, get in the car, there's a bear kind of thing, you know, like, I don't know how to describe it better than that. But
equate that to werewolves, So how did you feel about this coming back at the end of the episode and us learning, like, where exactly this piece fit in the story?
You know what? Conceptually, okay. But I feel like they've done it more than once this season, and I feel like this time worked a little less well. Like, this time you could have just had 2 or 3 minutes worth of extra footage or plot, and maybe they did. I don't know. Like, maybe they're, you know, maybe this is exactly what they wanted to do and I'm not appreciating enough, or maybe they had another scene planned which fell through, so they were like, we're just going to do, like, a callback scene. We're just going to take that thing and put it there, and that kind of works. Because I feel like there was another episode that they did that with, where we had a cold open and then we learnt how we got to that this season.
Yeah.
Am I mistaking that, or have we had that?
I don't remember specifically, but I'm pretty sure they've done this in all of Teen Wolf at least once or twice. I think conceptually the idea is really cool. I usually really like it. I think I just connected with this a little bit less, and it felt a little too repetitive, because although you don't know why people got where they got, I think, like, you understood the scene kind of by itself, and repeating it made it feel like, okay, you know, I've kind of come to this conclusion already.
Yeah.
Why watching it again? But I will say I loved seeing Malia kick ass twice. Mm-hmm. I thought that was pretty cool. And I think the line about the book that Scott yells out, we shouldn't have read that book, kind of really tied it in well enough.
Yeah. I would have kept it in sequence. I wouldn't have necessarily kept it. I don't know if the episode needed to open like that. I think it could have opened on something else.
I
probably would have kept it in the sequence of the episode. I know they kind of probably wanted to create some shock, like, oh my god, Scott's got asthma, what the hell's going on? But I might not have done it like that. So the first scene that we see back after that repeated scene, like, we have the opening and then the first new, I guess, I mean, they were all new scenes, but, like, up after this, we see a shot of the school field, it looks like, being dug up. Oh, this makes sense! This is why they were training on the plastic pitch later. Okay, so they're on the field, the grass field, I think, at the school, I assume it's meant to be at the school, if not somewhere else nearby. Was it the lacrosse field? It looked like that to me.
I think so.
Yeah, because where they were training later was like one of those AstroTurf pitches, which is not usually where they use, if you know what I mean. And so it's probably because the other field's full of holes. you know.
And you know Liam would fall down every single one of them.
Yeah, obviously. It is his main skill set. So new holes for apparently 10 new chimeras. Oh, no, 8 new holes. 2 dead chimeras that they know about, which is Tracy and Lucas, the scorpion boy. And Malia and Sheriff are both like, Donovan probably too, 11 chimeras. Donovan's probably one, and Stiles is like, shh, shh, on the Onovan day, shh, shh, and is basically stressing out that they are in any way sniffing around Donovan's general existence and his escape from jail and what the hell happened to him. He's still not told anyone about Donovan, basically. Like, he hasn't revealed what's happened to anyone. He's still carrying this on his own, which in a way isn't that surprising, but I'm wondering what it's going to be like when it comes out. Like, at this point, how do you feel about him dealing with that, I guess?
I mean, I'm disappointed because I would hope that out of anyone, he would tell Scott and that Scott would understand. I think what I'm beginning to piece together potentially is that it was less about the fact that he killed Donovan because it was an accident and it was self-defense. I mean, he did not mean to do that. He was just trying to get away, and he definitely didn't shove that pole through his chest by himself. I think maybe what he's most guilty of, or like why he feels guilty, is because he was thinking about fleeing the scene of the crime. He didn't, you know, call the police and say, this just happened. He just left the line open. I think he's worried about what Scott might say about maybe the fact that he doesn't feel that bad for killing Donovan. Yeah. It's less about the act and more about mentally where he is with this right now.
Yeah, that's kind of partially what I was thinking last week, that he kind of feels guilty that he doesn't feel like emotionally bad about it, that he's, you know, covering it up so sort of coldly, but it does seem to be stressing him out a lot. I mean, obviously, as it would. And then we start hearing theories from Malia and the sheriff about what connects the teenagers, what's something that they have to have in common. If they went all of this way to break Donovan out, they're not just picking randoms. How they are actually connecting the victims, the chimeras. And we don't actually get an answer for that. We know that they've worked out that there must be a connection, but no one actually puts any theories forth as to what that is, if you know what I mean. But given what we see in the rest of the episode, do you have any theories about what it is?
Well, actually, the theory that I like most came from one of our listeners on Twitter, at Polly McCallpack, and they said, I thought the doctors might have been choosing kids with a history of mental illness, and they mentioned how Tracy was obviously seeing a psychologist because she killed them, and who was, it was Tracy, Lucas. Donovan... Well, Donovan had the issues with, like, he wasn't fit to become an officer of the law because he had some, you know, he was kind of psychotic. And then I was thinking Lucas, he was super shy. They mentioned that when we first meet him. Like, usually he's really shy. So I was thinking maybe he had anxiety. So maybe the Dread Doctors are trying to fix the teenagers.
I don't know. I'm wondering, given what Lydia saw, given that we see that Hayden at the end of the episode is a bit of a question mark, and we know about her kidney thing, I'm wondering if it was people who've been, like, in surgery, like, under general anaesthetic or on an operating table, like, that they can do something to them during the surgical process, but, you know, at some point during their lives. But that means they would have to be playing quite a long game, but I don't know, it's quite weird, but we don't know yet, so yeah.
Did you have any theories other than, I guess, them being under general anesthesia? Because we did see, like, Donovan wasn't in the hospital, even Tracy.
I mean, we don't know.
Right, but, like, they did the Chimera part, like, in that really rundown lab in some basement.
I don't know. Maybe it's not actually about doing the procedure. Maybe it's about, like, giving them, the false memories, like, that they are having, like, flashback, like, so that they think that whatever happened to them wasn't real or was during the surgery. I don't know, honestly. So, yeah. The last thing about that whole Chimera Stilinski cop scene, the theorizing scene, was where Malia goes to cross out Donovan and the sheriff says, you know, I'm not calling him dead, not until I've seen a body, and Styles' face at that. I bet that makes Styles feel awesome. So even more than Scott, how Scott's going to react, can you imagine his dad, like, reacting to the Donovan situation? That's going to be really pretty, I think.
Yeah, I don't know how they're going to come back from this. Not that I don't think they can come back from it, but it's definitely a question of, you know, you've kept secrets from me before, but you didn't tell me this. This is kind of a big deal. So that's a little scary.
Yeah. Yeah, it's quite nasty, but we'll see.
Jumping forward, we see Parrish training Lydia, and I loved the scene. I love them together. It was really cute. And I like their sort of, they weren't antagonistic, but they were, Lydia was sort of like hyper-focused, and you could tell Parrish was getting a little distracted by her, and I just thought it was adorable.
I thought it was really hot and great and good and just vibey and nice, but not overly vibey, not like overly sexualized, even when they were like shirt. And, like, even when she took her jacket off, it was kind of like, I'm keeping this off so you can see that I ain't bleeding through the patch, if you know what I mean. It wasn't like, look at my boobs and stuff like that. Like, I don't know, it was, I really enjoyed it a lot. So, yeah.
Yeah, and she seems to be a fairly good fighter already. Her reflexes are pretty fast, and she knows how to block. I mean, she's not perfect, which I think it's always important to show people in training and making mistakes and kind of getting the hang of what they're trying to do prior to them just being perfect at it. So it was nice to have this sort of cut scene, and it begins to explain how she ends up the way that she ends up at the end of the series, which we saw in the beginning of the series.
Season. Yeah, I did. I liked it. And then they were gonna kiss or something, or they were both doing some, like, hot breathing, and then the Dread Doctor so had to close. Ruin it all.
Yeah, and that was really creepy, the way that she saw the hand, like, come around and grab her arm, and, you know, we'll talk about her flashback later, because we find out that it's not actually hers, but, that was, definitely ruined the moment.
Oh, well, that sucks. You know, it's a very slow burn between them. Like, maybe one day they will get together, but at the moment it's been a long process so far.
Which I like.
I don't mind. So, Scott, He's becoming quite trusting of Theo, and, like, you know, he's bringing him into all of their plans, and he goes to Theo, I guess, for advice or help. Like, Scott at this point is actually looking pretty run down, and Theo's kind of judgmental. He's like, dude, I came to Beacon Hills to be in your pack, not for you to have this crappy pack that you can't do anything about, basically. He's kind of, like, slightly judgmental, which was, I didn't like, but he...
I think that's so clever, though. I think that's sort of the greatest part about his character, is that he's obviously the bad guy. We know this at this point, and he is trying to break the pack apart. But at the same time, he says something like that, which convinces the rest of the characters that he's in it. You know, he wants to be part of the pack. He doesn't want to break it apart. He doesn't want anything bad to happen. But man, he is smart, and he knows how to play everybody.
Yeah, it's definitely an ongoing theme of this episode that he's kind of collecting secrets about everyone or playing on various weaknesses. You know, he's kind of got something on everyone at this point. except Liam. Maybe Liam will be his downfall. But basically, they decide that everyone has to read the book. Apparently, they've been putting off reading the book. Theo, obviously, he kind of knows. I don't know if the book is bad or good. Like, if Valak has done them a disservice by telling them to read the book, if it was a trick on Valak's part, or whether it's just like, before we read the book, we couldn't see what was going on, so we didn't have to deal with it, and now we have read the book, we see what's going on, and it's bad. But Theo definitely, told the Dread Doctors, he's like, oh, they found the book, and now they're going to Valak. But he didn't really say whether the book was, like, a tool that they helped to plant or not, if you know what I mean. Like, so he definitely wants them to read the book and probably knows that it will mess them all up. And then they have their little reading party, obviously, to actually get on with that, because they haven't got on with it yet. Only Malia has read it.
Right. And at that party, Styles and Malia talk a little bit, which I was actually kind of surprised this episode that there wasn't a confrontation, because Styles has sort of been ignoring her. At least when everything was going down with Donovan, he did ignore her calls a couple of times. And you can tell there's a little bit of tension between them right now. Styles is sort of rubbing his shoulder, and Malia asks about it, and he lies. And then he asks about, what sort of things Malia saw, and if she's gotten any more memories back about what happened to her in the car crash when she was a kid. And she doesn't say anything about the fact that she knows now that it was the Desert Wolf, her mother, who made the car crash. So we knew that.
Why is that such a bad thing to hide? Like, if he knew that she was, kind of looking for her, like if Styles knew that she was looking for her, and that Styles already knew that she had, the Desert Wolf was kind of bad, if you know what I mean.
Why
would you hide that memory?
I wonder if there's a difference between the Desert Wolf killing other people, maybe for, like, an assassin, like a mercenary, versus her actually shooting up a van of innocent people, if maybe she feels more ashamed of something like that and wants to keep it from Styles, or because she knows Styles is lying and so she doesn't feel comfortable telling him anything now.
Yeah, I don't know, actually. But they're certainly both keeping something from each other, and Theo knows what it is on both sides, which is fun. In Scott's class, AP Bio, back with the strict teacher, the girl who was on reading Wikipedia in the earlier week, basically the teacher's giving a lecture on cane toads in Australia, which, hey up, Australia, that's a real thing that happened. So about the biology and the ecosystem of Australia, what's up? Anyway, the girl, one of the girls decides to drop the class, basically. Theo is kind of hinting at Lydia that, oh, maybe this girl's suspicious because, look, her hair's coming out. Look at her having some funny things going on. But it turns out that it's just stress, or at least that's what we think it is at the moment, because it's been happening for 3 years because of this girl's, basically, her mental state or her pressure that she is under doesn't stop her. Maybe she is a chimera as well as her hair falling out. You never know, guys. But the point is, Lydia goes out to help her and sees the patch on her head, above her ear where her hair's falling out, and it triggers a memory of seeing something else happen in that spot on the body, which is her grandmother drilling into her own head with an electric drill. Which we don't actually see the action of it, just the implied aftermath of the hole in the head and the drill on the floor. But oh my god, like, way harsh, like, oh my god. So it's basically her grandmother Lorraine, the Banshee, at Icon House, Natalie Martin, like the mother's voice saying, I told you to stay in the car, Lydia, like, child Lydia, walking in to the building and into the room, seeing Lorraine in the bathtub having drilled herself in the head, and her grandmother telling her, Lydia, that they're coming for everyone. So I have a lot of questions about this. First of all, like, how was that experience for you?
Well, I don't know if I came to the conclusion that she was the one that drilled the hole in her head. Do we know that for sure?
Well, I think that it was implied that it was, except that we also know that, like, back in the day with the Deadpool and the, you know, the that whole thing from last season, we know that Brunsky, like, killed Lorraine, that was meant to look like suicide, but that Brunsky killed her. So was this that, or was this a totally separate incident? And who the hell, like, how did she get access to a drill, or how did they make it look like she got access to a drill? So, no, I don't know if she did it herself or not, but it's certainly meant... I think it's meant to look like she did it herself, especially because, obviously, the mother's being like, what have you done to yourself? But was this a Dread Doctor's thing? Like, is it that... Is that what she meant by they're coming for everyone, or was she talking about something that's already happened in the past, like with the Deadpool or anything like that? We definitely know that she was killed by Brunsky, but was it with one of his crazy injections, or was this the moment? Like,
I want to say that Brunsky killed her with one of his injections, just because obviously in this scene she's not dead, so I don't think that this was like one of his attempts or anything. So maybe she did do it to herself. I guess I just never really thought about it, but it's quite possible, and it could have something to do with, like, what Valak did to himself, because we know for sure that he drilled his own hole in his head, so maybe that's connected somehow. I do think that when she was saying they're coming for everyone, she was talking about the Dread Doctors, even if they weren't around when she was around, which I don't think they would have been, because I think the last time they were in town, it was 20 or 30 years ago, and that would be too long ago for Lydia to be so young. Like, Lydia wouldn't even have been alive yet. But because Lorraine was a banshee, she probably knew, and so she just, you know, was having one of her episodes, I guess, and just saying they're coming for everyone.
Yeah, I mean, do you think that, you know, Lorraine was involved with them that when they were there the first time around, in the way that Valak was, like, or anything like that?
Definitely a possibility.
Yeah.
I mean, if Lydia is having, like, memory surface, like, she obviously has some sort of connection where she's seeing visions of what's going on. So if she's having them, then I'm sure Lorraine did.
Good time. Sounds fun. Excellent. I loved the drilling in the head, regardless of who did it. That was really horrible, and I hated it so much. So that was good. All of these flashbacks were rather traumatic, and if they were all true, and it's really, I don't know, and I found them all very terrible in different ways. And no one sort of told anyone else, like, what they saw. Everyone was like, I had a flashback, you know, about... She kind of was like my grandmother in Icon House, like, but it wasn't anything to do with the Dread Dogs. But no one kind of told their specific trauma or anything like that. And it seems like they've all got some pretty horrible traumas in their past. So that's fun.
Yeah. Well, I think other than Lydia, who had her memory resurface earlier in the episode, everyone else's kind of happened at the end of the episode. And from what I can gather from the preview for next week, it looks like it's going to be taking off, like, right away, right at the end of this episode. So I don't think they've had time to discuss it yet.
Yeah. I just want them to sit around in a circle and talk about how sad they are.
Yeah, I'm sure you did. Not really. I mean, I think it would be helpful, but I doubt it'll happen.
Oh, well.
Let's talk about Kira for a minute, because Kira was having trouble reading the book, and she didn't really know why. She thought she was just tired. The words were blurring on the page. I didn't honestly think anything of it until Mason sits down with her, and Mason, bless him, is so adorable and cute. He's doing tons of research because this is all new to him and he wants to, you know, figure out what's going on. And I think that this is a good thing, not because I think he's replacing Stiles' initial role, but I think that it's nice to have somebody who's in the books and not necessarily right in the middle of everything like Stiles is.
Yeah, I do notice that with Liam and Mason. They're not necessarily always included in group pack time. They didn't get to come to the reading party. They're trying to keep them out of it, the younger kids, I think, which is maybe wise, but also, yeah, like, why do you think that is?
I mean, it's probably definitely a protective thing. I would hate to think that they... like, the group is like, well, I don't think, you know, Liam or Mason's going to be any help, because that's just kind of sad, because they're the age that the kids were when they first started, and, you know, they had a lot to deal with, too, but maybe they're just hoping to kind of keep it centralized to the
like
least amount
Dawn
of people.
Buffy.
It could be. It could be.
Get really mad and do something stupid to rebel against, like, his,
probably,
you know, his werewolf parents not letting him be involved with things.
Yeah. Although that kind of pisses me off that they let Theo in and
I
didn't
know.
Let.
I don't know, man. Theo, I mean, we know that he's not all that, but, like, I still can't believe that they're like, yeah, I'm in this.
Yeah. Well, anyway, Mason did his homework, and he says that Kira can't read the book because it's confusing her fox spirit. Fox spirits as kitsunes have trouble with languages, and the book is one big language trick because it helps you to remember memories that you had pushed away. And so that sort of explains all of that. And the other side of it is that Kira, you know, the lights keep flickering around her. My question is, was that actually her? I mean, she kept denying that it was her. Was it, or was it the Chimera? Because the Chimera was
the wires in the basement.
Right. Which, what the heck was he? Because when they opened him up, he looked like a jellyfish. Like, he was all, like, jiggly.
Yeah, I'm wondering if he was, like an one of those, like, electric fish, like, deep-sea fish things, if you know what I mean. But okay, but with Kira denying it was her, I think that it's fine for her to deny it was her, even if it was her, because it's clearly, if it was her, it's not her knowingly. And I didn't like Scott last week being like, I don't know if I can trust her or whatever, because none of it is her. Like, it's not Kira Yukimura and her personality. She's not, like, secretly evil, you know? Like, it's something to do with her that she's not in control of. So when she says it wasn't me, it's not her saying I didn't cause this at all. It's her saying, I didn't do that on purpose. I didn't consciously do that, if you know what I mean. So I don't know why there's this, like, lack of trust with Kira, or this, like, lack of not, you know, telling her what's going on, because it's clearly not, I'm secretly evil and plotting against you. So I don't feel comfortable with that.
Yeah, I mean, I understand Scott's distrust because of what happened with Styles.
Yeah.
I don't think he meant, you know, I don't trust Kira, the person. I think he meant, you know, I don't trust Kira and the fox spirit that obviously lives inside of her. I think he doesn't want a repeat of what happened with Styles, which is totally fair because that was terrible. But, yeah, it is kind of sad that I don't want them to start ostracizing her because of what's going on, because, like you said, it's not within her control, and I'd rather see them helping her than pushing her away to protect themselves. I think that's kind of selfish.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. Like, and you know, you can probably bet that, well, we sort of know, like, that Theo is going to encourage this disconnect with Kira. He's going to be like, hey, look at how evil Kira's becoming, you know. Better get rid of her. So, I don't know, do we think that Theo really, does he want Scott all to himself? Like, or does he want to break up the pact? Does he want to take down Scott's power? Like, what do you think Theo's whole aim is at the moment?
Gosh, you know, I really don't know. I feel like we're missing a huge chunk of his story, and that somehow it's centered around his sister. I have a feeling that because what we saw in the premiere episode was we saw Rave Wolf go after Scott, and he was all brawn. You know, he just tried to attack him, and it didn't work. And he was reporting back to the Dread Doctors, and he was saying, give me more power, I know I can do it, but they cut him off, no second chances. Theo, I think, is trying to do the same thing, maybe to take his power, maybe to just take him out of the picture altogether, but instead of going at it head on, he's getting in with the group, he's being smart about what he's doing, and he's breaking them apart that way, because we know that an alpha without a pack isn't as strong as one with a pack.
Yeah, and so just taking down everything around him before going after him. And then Isaac will come in and save the day and be like, no, I'll always be in Scott's pack. Don't you dare. I'm the better looking blonde, bland, white boy on this show. Get out of here. What? It's true. Where's the lie, Karen?
I didn't say there was one.
You disapprove of my theory?
I love your theory. I definitely want Isaac to come back.
Yeah, and take down Theo with his great love for Scott. I think that will happen.
I would probably cry, like, buckets of tears if that happened.
Yeah. Speaking of crying, I actually got a bit distressed and kind of anxious and teary at the next part of the episode, which is Scott's flashback. He wants to drop AP Bio, like, he kind of, at the end of his class, decides to, you know, hand in his drop form because he's just too overwhelmed. He, the teacher's kind of like, but why? Because even though she's quite harsh, she was like, I don't think you should drop Scott, because she knows that he's very determined and he wants to be a vet, and that was a prerequisite for his college course. And when she says to him, like, you want this, like, to be a veterinarian, we have a flashback, presumably, to what initially triggered his desire to be a veterinarian, and also what, you know, triggered a really big asthma attack, which hospitalized him, which was that his dog was killed by another dog in front of him. And we don't see this too graphically, but we see enough of it to get the picture of what happened. And I found this very distressing. Just for Scott, it just sort of hammers home the kind of person Scott is, like, that this has affected him his whole life. I mean, brutal trauma does tend to affect people their whole life, but, you know, some people go out and shoot animals for fun, so it probably doesn't affect them that much to see something like this. But, yeah, Scott's really, 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 really messed up by this and is in hospital having his own asthma attack and asking after the dog, and the dog's dead, and they don't want to tell him the dog's dead, and it's all very horrible, basically. And you know, he was triggered by her talking about him being a vet, so clearly he sort of, his whole life, that's how he got into, you know, working at the vet and saving animals and stuff. So yeah, did you kind of expect this kind of thing for Scott ever? Like, I certainly didn't, really. Like, you know, we knew he was a nice guy, and we knew that he was becoming quite serious about being a vet, but I don't know, this kind of took me by surprise a bit. How did you feel about it?
Yeah, it took me by surprise too. I didn't really sit down and think, okay, what is Scott's flashback going to be?
No, neither.
But I was expecting it to be something other than this. Like, thinking back, okay, what were the options? I was thinking maybe something with his parents splitting, maybe what his dad did to him. Although, like, he didn't really remember that, but that kind of plays into the whole situation too. Not sure. Didn't expect it to have to do with the dogs and the veterinarian, but I actually really like that they went down this road because it connects everything.
Yeah.
And we keep going in these circles of, you know, everything kind of goes back to Scott really wanting to be a vet. And it's this sort of B plot that I wasn't expecting to experience this season,
wow,
but I'm really glad that we have.
Dog right now?
No, my boss is home and the dogs freak out. Like,
is that Aries?
No, that's my best friend's dog. That's Swiffer and Max going nuts.
Okay, well, don't kill each other like on Teen Wolf, Swiffer and Max. They came in right at the moment. They knew you were talking about dogs being killed and they freaked out.
Yeah, apparently.
Yeah, all right. Anyway, sorry, carry on. Yeah, I like the whole determined Scott veterinarian thing, but it's sad now as well. So the teacher is obviously, you know, quite startled by his asthma attack, and, you know, obviously doesn't know he's a werewolf and that he doesn't carry an inhaler. Just the way he says, I think I'm having an asthma attack, it's like, it's so shocked that it would have been funny
yeah.
if it wasn't so horrible, if you know what I mean. And I really liked that. And the teacher's like, someone's got to have an inhaler. Come on. He said, and then a boy comes out of the class. Is this the boy that's later the Chimera, or is this another boy? Because they looked very similar.
Oh, I didn't even notice, to tell you the truth.
Okay, maybe it is, maybe it isn't. I don't know. A boy comes out onto the field being where Liam and Hayden have been having a bit of a play fight, which we'll talk about in a moment because that's sort of his own plot with Hayden. They've been doing some sports practice and he comes out being like, anyone, asthma attack? Anyone got an inhaler? And Liam straight away is like, Scott. Even though he never knew that Scott had asthma, like, he never knew Scott when Scott had asthma, but somehow he knew. I don't know if he, like, sensed it, like, you know, oh, my alpha's in trouble, and he, like, tapped in and he knew it was Scott, because it's a bit of a leap for him to be. I would have understood if that was Stiles, because Stiles' first memory of Scott is still going to be, like, the little asthma pathetic kid, like, that he would always associate that with Scott. But Liam associating it with Scott, I was like, how? But then we see when he goes into the classroom and he gives him the inhaler, he uses his werewolf powers to kind of pull Scott into consciousness. So maybe he did actually sense it with his beta powers. But he was,
which I love that idea.
Yeah, which is very cute. And he saved the day and Hayden kind of sees it and is like, oh, Liam is a good guy. Okay, cool. No problem. And that was fun and nice. And Scott sort of semi-recovered, though he did have another attack later on. But yeah, how do you feel about, like, Liam and his little beatitude, I suppose?
His what?
Beatitude, like attitude, but I made a word.
Beatitude, okay. I like it. I love that he was the one there to save him. I love that he used his powers to do it. I would love to think that he has this connection with Scott where he could sense that it was him, not just like smell it or hear it or something like that, but like just inside of him intuitively just sense that something was wrong.
Isaac is going to be so mad that he doesn't have the connecting beta powers with Scott when he comes back. He's going to ask for the candle ceremony. He's going to be like, no, this kid cannot have a psychic connection to you and me not have one. I don't know. Sorry. I'm a bit hung up on the Isaac thing, I know, but never mind. Anyway, moving on from that, I guess Liam, you know, before he saves Scott, has a bit of his own plot going on in the episode.
Yeah, we're kind of jumping all over the place this episode because the way that it was edited, it was very choppy. Not that that's necessarily a bad thing, but when you're trying to do it chronologically, you just bounce all over the place. Mm. So we're kind of grouping things in certain sections. But before this all kind of went down, or I guess during it when it was going down, we find out what happened in sixth grade. And I was like, finally, I've been waiting for this since we were first introduced to Hayden. And it turns out that Liam got into a fight with another boy. This was sort of at the height of when he had his anger issues. And Hayden walked right into the middle of it, and Liam kind of accidentally punched her in the face and totally ruined her yearbook picture. Retaliation, well, I can understand in sixth grade why that would scar you. Those sort of things are very important to a lot of kids. And we were talking about it was probably like an embarrassment thing that she just never got over. But I love that in retaliation, she did the same thing to him.
Those photos really looked like them. Like, I'm wondering if they actually did bring in their own photos of being that age and they, you know, photoshopped the bruising on
it.
Because they really, I think it was them. But I don't know, that whole plot, like, okay, sixth grade, we did not have individual yearbook pictures. We only had that in senior year. Every other year was a class, like a group picture. Only senior year of high school got single. You got single pictures when you got your school photo taken. You got an individual and you got your group picture. But in the yearbook was only the group. The single pictures were only for you to give to your, like, grandparents and stuff like that. So, yeah, no one would have seen my close-up broken nose in the sixth grade, is what I'm saying. But the whole Liam and Hayden plot, the whole episode, I thought was really sweet, like, that he keeps following her to work and being like, here's some more money, and he's not being, like, pushy, like, why don't you forgive me or anything. He's just like, you said I owed you, here's some more of the money, now I'm gonna go. Like, he's not really, you know, it seems to still be annoying her, but he's not pushing her or defending himself. He's just giving her the money and carrying on. Like, he clearly likes her and feels bad and stuff like that. And I think it's cute. And then their little sport game is cute, with them both training in their respective sports and making a competition with each other. And then there's also, like, the reason we find this out is that Mason, who clearly knew Liam at the time, is telling Brett about it. And Brett's there in his school uniform, which looks much more chill than, like, his shirtlessness or his lacrosse clothes. So I was like, yeah, okay, Brett, you can hang out in your prep school uniform at Beacon Hills. This is fine. And they're just hanging out and chilling and discussing, you know, more of the, you know, how to see if there's any chimeras that there might be some Brett's school. And they're discussing all of the different ways you could recognize someone with supernatural tendencies, which does come in handy later on, apparently. So, yeah.
Yep.
I did like all of the aspects of that whole Liam plot. And I kind of like Brett being around as a kind of like, oh, yeah, this is this guy we know. He's not, like, in our group exactly, but he's like a connection in the supernatural world. So we get him in sometimes. And I kind of like that. Though they should have Satomi as well. Okay, so Malia and Theo have a bit of a confrontation in the gym room on the very same exercise machine which I posted a photo of our very own Donya working out on at the Teen Wolf gym, which is a real gym. It's not a fake gym. They're real machines. They just bring a camera in there when they want to use it for a gym. So the guys really work out in there for their muscles, both on screen and off. He's basically in there being like, whatever. No, it's a bit more specific than that. She is like, why didn't you tell Scott? And he was like, I thought you didn't want me to. And she says, I don't. And she was like, don't you want to know why? And he's basically like, I don't care what you've going on. I want to be in the pack. If you want to do something else, I don't care. Like, I don't know. Do you think he's telling her the truth in any way here about the whole, like, I don't care what your agenda is?
I think so. I think that he knows how to push her buttons, and that's one of those ways. I think she does very well with confrontation, because she'll just lay the smack down. I mean, that's just Malia. And this sort of blasé, like, I'm kind of not interested sort of thing, really, she doesn't know how to handle it, because she's very straightforward. I mean, she was that way with Styles, like, very, like, this is what I want, and now I'm getting it, and now I'm happy. The fact that he can do that to her and frustrate her to no end really worries me a little bit. Yeah. But also the way that he just keeps flirting with her and just being like, you know, whatever you want to do, let's do it. And I'm just like, no, stay away from her.
Well, I'm a little bit worried as well, because, there's a few other aspects to talk about here. Number one, she says, like, Scott, she's like, why didn't you tell Scott? She doesn't mention Styles. She's like, why didn't you tell my boyfriend on me? Like, but, okay, you know Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
Yes.
You know how Ward sucks, right?
Yes.
And is totally gross and irredeemable, except that he, not except, but, like, but additionally, his feelings for Skye are, like, well, as legitimate as they could be. Like, he really did actually like Skye and, you know, wanted whatever he wanted with her, and it wasn't, like, a fake ploy as being part of the team. It was something separate to him being Hydra. What if Theo, do you think Theo actually likes Malia regardless of what he's trying to do, if you know what I mean?
No, I think that he's playing her, and that by playing her, it's just going to feed into the rest of what he's trying to do with the pack. I think that, you know, if he can sort of get her on his side, or if he can, like, hook up with her and hold that over her head, that's going to drive her and Styles apart, which is just going to drive Styles probably further apart from everybody else. You know, he's going to be kind of unhinged, and I think that it's just another way to drive a wedge in between people.
Fun. Yeah, because, you know, she definitely starts off saying, like, what are you doing this? So I have to, like, owe you now, like, you keeping this secret for me and all of that, which is, you know, what I'd think, that, you know, like, holding something over her head. Again, do we know why that she wouldn't want Scott or anyone to know about the Desert Wolf aspect of the visions?
I just really wonder if it's because maybe the Desert Wolf is worse than they initially thought she was, and perhaps she doesn't want them to, like, go after her or something. Like, she wants to sort of confront her on her own before the pack gets involved. I really don't know yet. I'm not sure, but it's sort of strange to have her playing it so close to her chest because of her loyalty to Styles and Scott.
There's also the moment where she kind of stops the exercise machine as he's on it. Do we think that that implies that she's actually tougher than him, like physically stronger in her day-to-day supernatural powers?
I definitely think so. I don't think that was, like, him faking it, because she walks away, her back is to him, and he, like, grabs his ribs, like, oh my god, that hurts so bad. Mm. Which, I don't know if that necessarily means anything, if that's going to be important later on, but I just love the fact that Malia can just totally own him. I think that's amazing.
Yeah, I think it was quite cool as well. So, yeah, it should be interesting to see how that goes. I don't know, they're weird pair, but never mind.
Yeah. Well, Theo then goes to talk to Scott and tells him that when, you know, he was creeping around the house, he went to check on Kira and he recorded her speaking in Japanese and he translated it. And turns out we were right, which is always a good thing, that Kira was saying, "I am the messenger of death."
Oh, did we already translate this elsewhere?
Yeah, that was the conclusion that we came up with, and also like the fandom kind of came together and figured it out as well, but we had Danya and Jen working on it too. But she definitely says, "I'm the messenger of death," and that's when Scott tells Theo, he's told Theo now, but he's told nobody else, that the fox spirit is taking over Kira. And Scott doesn't know if he can trust her anymore. And we've sort of talked about that already, but what really kills me is that Scott is confiding in Theo, of all people, and he's not confiding in anyone else. I can understand maybe why he doesn't want to tell Kira and concern her, but he didn't tell Styles, he didn't tell Lydia, he didn't tell Malia, but I think Styles and Lydia are the two that he would have gone to normally, and he hasn't, but he's talked to Theo.
Yeah, it's really bizarre to me that he would do that, except for, I don't know, that Theo's there, or he doesn't know Theo as well, he doesn't want to admit to the others that they'll tell Kira, or I don't know, or that they'll question his choices not to tell Kira. I don't know, it's all a bit sus. Theo, he's getting in there. Maybe he's able to manipulate their emotions, I don't know.
That just made me, like, flashback to Twilight.
Yeah, exactly. Like, but except more evil than that. All right, so we're up to the third flashback, which is Styles. He gets triggered in the hospital to basically, you know, they come to the hospital. Styles and Lydia come to the hospital to look for the stuff in. Styles and Lydia come to the hospital to look for Lydia's operating theater, basically, for her to have the memories about whose memories she was having, basically, in that whole situation of her surgery, because apparently it wasn't her own. And while she's off doing that, Styles is triggered by a memory at the hospital, which he has of his mother, which is that...
Which, can I just jump in here real quick before we actually get into the details? When this first started, like when he got into the elevator, like I knew something was going to happen. And he turns around and we see the figure in the background and instantly I knew what was going to happen. And I forgot that she was supposed to show up in this episode. I said some very bad words.
I didn't know that she was meant to come in this episode. Is it the same actress?
I don't think so. We'll have to figure that out. I'm really not sure. But as soon as I saw her in the background, I was just like, oh God, this is going to destroy me. Mm. And it did. It was very difficult to handle.
Yeah. So it wasn't very pleasant. He has the memory of being in the hospital and following, I guess, his father up to the roof, in where his mother, when she was sick with the dementia, the particular type of dementia that they thought Styles had, was having delusions that Styles himself, as a child, was gonna kill her. Basically, she hated him. Like, she started finding him a threatening presence just because of these delusions, basically, saying, you know, he's going to kill me and, you know, turning to her husband and being like, no, I've got to get away from him. And Styles basically witnessing this. And that's pretty horrible when he was 10. And this is something that I actually have seen happen in real life. Maybe not with someone being like, he's trying to kill me, but someone in my extended family started getting a degenerative brain disease and really took against one of her own grandkids, was just like really harsh and like terrible to one of her young grandkids, just decided that she didn't like him and that it was really weird. And it was like this, but on like a less murdery level, if you know what I mean. So that was unpleasant, but yeah, so this is one of Styles' last memories of his mother, presumably. We've read lots of things about Styles being, you know, traumatized by his mother's death. We also kind of know that, I think that we know that she wasn't, that he was there when his mother died, because, you know, the father was in that traffic accident. Do you remember?
Like, yeah.
That he was handling that traffic call and he was with someone else when she died. The person who might have been a banshee or whatever, who told him, you know, about Claudia. And we don't know whether that moment of her dying was like peaceful, like, oh, I love you, son, and whether it was a good moment for her, or whether, you know, all of Styles' last memories of her are just this like horrible, hateful thing. But it was certainly something that went through periods of happening. So, yeah, you said some bad words.
I did. You know, and to be completely honest, I was kind of sad with the way that this was edited, because it jumped around so much. I think if we had gotten the whole thing from start to finish in one chunk, it probably would have killed me, which maybe is a good thing that it wasn't. But it kind of took you out of it, the way that we kept jumping back to Lydia and to Scott and doing all these different things. But this was way more than what I was expecting he had lived through with his mother's disease and her eventual death. It was really difficult to see that. And I was really sad to see that he was so young when it happened, and especially Dylan acting, and like, you know, Kristen and I, who's been on the podcast before, and now we're roommates.
Did she watch it with you in person?
She did. It was really exciting. We both had our hands over our faces during this whole scene.
Did you pull your shirt up over your face?
I didn't, but I did put my hand over my mouth. But she said, you know, they didn't even zoom in on his face. He was standing back. You could see almost his full body, and you still saw the tears just dripping off of his face.
Mm.
My God, that is good acting. It was just, it was amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, so that happened. That was unpleasant. And then in real life on that rooftop, he's attacked by the electricity-eating chimera, who was messing with stuff in the hospital, presumably after he finished messing with stuff at the school. Why do they always go for the school and the hospital? Is that where all of Beacon Hills is? Like, I don't know. Why not, like, the mall or, like, a bank? Anyway, never mind. It's because they only have those sets. I know that. But it's, you know, every show has its staple places where stuff happens. But never mind. So he's attacked by the chimera on the roof. Theo saves him. Like, Theo jumps in and attacks the chimera and kills him, rips his throat out, basically. And Theo's like, don't tell Scott, don't tell Scott. And then Styles is like, why not? Why shouldn't I? And then Theo says, because I didn't tell Scott about Donovan. And Styles is just like, oh, shit, what?
Yeah.
So Theo knows about Donovan, presumably because he's working with the Dread Doctors and he knows, like, when Donovan's body was picked up. Or he's a really good guesser or something. Anyway, Theo knows that, or he made a very good judgment call that he was right about, one of those two. And yeah, so how did that make you feel when that happened?
I mean, the one thing that's going for Theo, and it's not a good thing, but he knows how to play the game, man. Like, he knows how to play everybody. And it just, yeah, it floored me. I mean, I knew that he was getting an idea of what happened from listening between Styles and Malia, like their conversation and everything, but he went there, and I was so mad that he went there, but I guess I'm not that surprised either.
No, it's just really... I'm not surprised, but it's like, oh, now everyone's going to have to do what Theo wants. Like, he's got something to hold over everyone's head, and it's just nasty and terrible, and I don't know how to handle that, basically. He's just so blah. I don't know. And my big thing here as well is that at least I don't know how long it takes, but Theo's eyes didn't instantly turn blue or anything. So when we saw him originally, he was like, oh, he's got orange eyes, you know, yellow eyes. He can't be that bad. Like when he was fighting, he's just a normal, average werewolf looking for a pack or whatever when we met him originally. But he killed this guy. And this throws another question into our whole, like, what is the killing of an innocent? Why does the blue happen, etc., etc.? Like, we never found out how Peter Hale got his blue eyes before he became the Alpha, if you know what I mean. You know,
yeah, obviously. But nobody's surprised that he has blue eyes.
No, true. But we never found out what his circumstances of killing were. Like, we know Derek's and stuff like that. So, yeah. There's that. And who else had blue eyes? Did anyone else have blue eyes? The twins, maybe? What, when they were not alphas anymore? You know, when they became unalphaed, when they became... I think them. Anyway, never mind them. So Theo's eyes don't instantly turn blue. Maybe they will, and it'll be like, hey, Theo, what happened to your eyes? Who you kill lately? Or there's more to the killing than just, oh, I have killed another person. Like I said last week, maybe it's, like, you know, killing a non-supernatural being, or maybe it's, like, something about knowing it's in combat or self-defense. Someone else suggested, I think it might be in our feedback, something about that the innocent, like, that the other thing, that the innocent life has not killed anyone. But I don't know how, like, how the spirit or the eyes or whatever conducts this, like, knows, if you know what I mean. Like, it's very confusing. The point is, he's still got yellow eyes, even though he's killed this creature. And we don't know if this creature has killed anyone else or not. We know that he's only been a chimera for like a day, and he chewed some wires, but that's it.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
All right, well, wrapping up this episode, we go back to the Hayden and Liam storyline, and we find out that Hayden needs the money. She's working at that club cinema under the table. She needs the money for medicine because she had a kidney transplant. And Liam is trying so hard to get on her good side, which I really find them adorable. I'm definitely starting to ship it. I really like it. Mm. And you can tell she's kind of coming around, especially since we find out that her sister is the deputy, one of the deputies, which I thought was a cool little connection there. And she's like, hey, you know, he's kind of cute now. And Hayden doesn't really say anything. Mm-hmm. So I think she's feeling it. She's just got to get through, you know, her sixth grade scarring.
Yeah.
But we do find out that she's also a chimera, I guess technically, because I believe her kidney must have come from somebody who was a werewolf or something. I don't know if we know 100% that she's a werewolf, because we've seen her eyes glow and we know she can heal. So she could potentially be something else.
Well, we also have, you know, when Lydia was having her memories at the operating theater, that the machine, like, beats out Hayden's name, basically. Like, that there's a calling to Lydia about Hayden. Like, it's saying, Hayden, Hayden, which, don't know what that's all about. Don't know if she's...
Wait, it did?
Yeah.
How did I miss that?
I don't know, but I wondered why you didn't make a point about it. Like, yeah, that when Lydia's in the operating theater, she hears a, like, heartbeat machine, except it's beating out, like, Hayden's name, like, vocally. And then it kind of that sound like transports onto the scene where Liam tests her eyes. So I don't know why, like, Liam suddenly suspected her, like, why he in the club he was like, Hayden, can you just do this thing for me? Like, when suddenly he was like, oh, I should test if she's supernatural. Like, I don't know if something that she said inspired him to, you know, about the kidney thing inspired him to think that. But, you know, she's had the kidney transplant and, you know, either it was in that moment that something happened or it was something to do with she's someone who's had surgery so that they've been able to get to her recently as well. So, yeah, I don't know. It's I don't know why, like, Liam just suddenly, unless he's, like, testing everyone that he can, obviously it's something on everyone's mind, but, like, what inspired him in that moment? But certainly Lydia heard her name when she went to check the operating theatre. Like, that was the result of her findings. And I think that the synopsis of next week's episode saying, you know, something like that they're going to band together to protect, or Liam wants them to band together to protect the newest victim is Hayden, like that they're going to try and stop her from having these chimera problems or something like that.
Hashtag chimera problems.
Yeah, well, you know.
Okay.
Yeah, any other thoughts, I guess, about this whole episode, about any unanswered questions or moments that we didn't talk about? The owner of that club that she works at, he's a fun guy. I hope someone kills him.
Yeah, I mean, I'm right there with you. He seems like a douche canoe. That's a new word I've learned recently.
Oh, yeah, that's a good internet word, douche canoe.
Yeah, douche canoe. Yeah, I'm really excited for Hayden's storyline, actually. I think she's a really cool character, and I hope that maybe she can come in on the pack. That would be nice. But otherwise, this was a really good episode. It was a little all over the place, but kind of came together in the end. We got some answers. We've got a lot more questions, and I'm definitely looking forward to next week, as always. Next week's 7. We're so close to the end already.
Oh, it's weird.
Crazy. I don't like it. Yeah. I just want Teen Wolf every week, always.
Forever. No, you would kill yourself. It would be too much work.
It would be a lot.
You would feel very stressed about that, I think. And Jeff would also kill himself, just saying. Because it's so much. It's so high. Like, it's so it takes so long to get one episode finished of the actual show that just, they would never sleep, like, given what we've heard about them doing, like, you know, night shoots and however many hour days that they work, like, on television sets. So I think that every week might be a bit much, but,
you know. I agree.
10 episodes every 6 months is not very much for us, though, so we would have liked a little bit more.
Shall we jump into this final feedback?
Yeah. Do you want to do the first one?
Yeah, we kind of already did the second one.
Oh, yeah, I'll mention whoever. Oh, that was anonymous, but I'll talk about it again in a second.
Okay.
Go on with this one.
So, jumping into our feedback, the first one is from actually Austin on Tumblr, and they say, Teen Wolf fan since 3A, podcast fan since middle of season 4, love the show. I might be late to the game here, but has anyone noticed T.R. McCammon has the same initials as one Theo Rankin? We obviously know he's connected with the Dread Doctors, but it seems weird that those happen to be the initials. Then again, now I'm totally thrown off with Valak's story, but his story was told after being pressured into it, and those aren't always reliable either, just food for thought. My initial thought, and let me know if you disagree with this, Nat, is that I do believe Valak. I think he's a reliable narrator. I don't think he really had any reason to lie. I think it was in his best interest to tell the kids the truth because maybe they could take care of the Dread Doctors for him and he wouldn't have to do anything, which seems like the type of guy he is.
Oh,
I don't I don't think that Theo is connected to the T.R. McCammon, that maybe it's just coincidence, but I mean, we don't know enough information to confirm that either way, but my initial thought is that no, there's no connection there.
Well, that's true. I feel the same way, and maybe it'll betray me, and you know, Valak will be like this weird you know, double agent who has been working with the Dread Doctors as well, and like giving the kids enough of the truth to get them into place where they want them. But who knows? I will say that until this week, and I got a good look at the book cover, I thought that they were saying that the author's name was Tiara McCannon, like a weird woman's name, like Tiara, like a crown, like that, that it was some weird, strange women's name. Like, I don't know who would call their child Tiara, but I'm sure someone in the world has in their life.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, TR. So, no, I didn't think about it in terms of Theo Rake and TR because I thought that the person's name was Tiara McCammon. But never mind. never mind that. I don't know how to feel now. It could be a coincidence. It could be not. But I really don't know. So the other thing we had was an anonymous ask, as I sort of mentioned with the eye thing, someone, I'll just quote them, saying, "I always assumed that an innocent life for when werewolves kill someone was that the innocent life had never killed anyone in return, that that's why they were innocent, so that the other person was an innocent, as in that they weren't a killer," which is very plausible. However, with Theo and this guy that he's just killed, I mean, he's, as I said, he's only been a chimera for like a day. He chewed up some wires. We don't know that he killed anyone either. Like, so I don't know what the deal is there. We'll never know the answers to the eye question, apparently. But never mind. You know, one day we'll nail that down, hopefully. Or we'll get some more answers soon. But we'll keep that one in mind for next time we get to collar someone from Teen Wolf and be like, "Tell us your secrets now," and they'll be like, "Get away from me." Yeah, that's probably how it'll go. But I don't know, it does seem a little inconsistent, but maybe there's more to it than we know about. So yeah. I think that's about all we have for this week. Next week's episode is called, Karen?
It is called Strange Frequencies.
Ah, yes, that's right. I did actually read that because I watched the trailer. So, yeah. That's going to be next week. That's going to be episode 7. And then we're going to have only a few more episodes till the season's done. And apparently we might have a sad ending that is not actually very satisfying at all at the end. And might be a cliffhanger where we're very angry and upset until whenever season 5B comes out, which, if the patterns follow the same way as the last time they split a season, would be January, but I don't know if that's in any way confirmed or not, if you know what I mean.
Not confirmed as far as I know, but I would assume that would be how they're doing it.
Yeah, that was the same as last time, so we'll see.
Uh-huh.
All right, so just before we go, we'll have a few words about Dead Karen 2K15. We have been posting a few pictures of her day from our set visit to Teen Wolf when we went up at Comic-Con. Mostly they've been of Karen being dead. I posted those ones first because they were the funnest. And I've got a few more to get out there now of some other locations and items. I might save them for significant things. Like, for example, this week I put Donya on the workout machine because the workout machine was a part of the episode. But I've got one or two more to post during this week and maybe a couple to save for later on. But what was your favourite picture that we've posted so far, Karen? And how did it feel to die in that elevator? A lot of drama happens in that elevator. And dying in the locker room, in the school hallway, on a gurney in the hospital. How was all of that for you?
You know, I kind of complained about the hashtag and everything that I didn't approve of. But,
you like it.
Dying on the set was kind of fun. I feel like, you know, if you're going to go to the Teen Wolf set, you have to die there. So it just seemed right. Like, all was right with the world. I think I like the elevator one the best.
Yeah. A lot of people have died in that elevator, probably.
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt it.
Yeah, it's funny to be there and think about all of the things that have happened in particular spots. I don't really have that in my head, like, this is where that happened, this is where we did kind of want to reenact the Styles and Derek and Jennifer Blake scene in the elevator, but we didn't have a baseball bat to threateningly menace. But next time, maybe we can take props. Be like, we want to do this.
Or they can give us props.
Oh, well.
Real props.
Now, we might be pushing it. We have not actually seen a props department, which I don't know where they keep that kind of stuff. Like, here's Styles' baseball bat, or like, here's all of the guns that we have and stuff like that, you know? Like, I wonder where they do actually keep all of the props that are needed, because we've seen that version for wardrobe, like for the clothes. But I'd love to see a props department and, like, see what's real and what's not actually real. So, yeah, if anyone out there from Team Wolf is listening, let us come and do, like, a review of your props department and speak to your props-making people, because that would be lots of fun. What prop would you most like to hold from the Teen Wolf set?
Oh, that's a hard question. I feel like the bat is very significant.
Yeah. I wouldn't mind a bow and arrow. The bat is good. I wonder if they still have any bows and arrows, or if they buried them all with Allison.
Aww.
Sorry. Yeah, a bat. The bat would be fun. I don't know. Anyway. We'll think about this more later. We're just rambling now. So, yeah, we'll go and see you guys next week. Yeah, let us know if there's any feedback you've got or theories for us to read out on the next episode. You can answer any of the questions that we've asked and haven't been able to answer ourselves, and we'll theorize on that for next week. But until then, I'll say bye-bye and Karen will say bye. So, bye.
Bye.
Tell me where the freak's at.
Okay, I'm just gonna get my box of Kleenex just in case I cough. Hang on. Sorry. Oh, my blanket. No, I'm trapped. I'm trapped!
Did you fall down a hole, like Liam? Okay,
I know you can hear this, Karen, because this mic will pick up the whole room, so I hope that this is funny for you.
Are you still alive? Matt? Natalie?